Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode posted at aforementioned website, WGNplus.com. Episode 78 and counting. And don't forget the landing page. All previous podcasts are up on the landing page. You go to WGNplus.com, go to entertainment, and then you'll see a prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And as I've said, I have deemed myself at this point binge worthy. So get your knife, get your fork, get your napkin, sit down and fill your plate with podcasts to your heart's content. It's just one big country buffet of podcasts, if you will. Mac and cheese, turkey, chicken, green bean casserole, whatever it is at the... I've never been to country buffet, actually, but I got to say, everybody makes fun of it, but the commercials don't look bad. But anyway, binge away on an Elton Jim podcast to your heart's desire. As we continue now with episode 78, and I must say, a couple of weeks ago, I was out of town, and I went to the beautiful spot, one of the most beautiful spots in the country, I think, beautiful Lake Tahoe in Nevada. Actually, Lake Tahoe is split boundary-wise between California and Nevada. Part of Lake Tahoe is on the California side, and another side is on the Nevada side. The boundaries cut right through it. I was on the Nevada side, and so I have to give you some background. About 14 years ago, you talk about direct marketing, and your mail is always filled with all this stuff all the time, and try this, try that, try this. And, half the time you throw things out and you don't even read them and it's junk mail. And I'm usually the first one to round up the junk mail, not even really give much attention to it and just pitch it. But for whatever reason, 2003. So, yeah, we're talking 14 years ago. Wow, 14 years ago. This little card comes in. And I'm getting no endorsements here. I'm just telling you the story. This little card, direct mail piece, comes in from Hyatt. And it says, would you like to spend 2 days and 3 nights free at our Lake Tahoe resort? And all you have to do is sit for an hour and listen to our little presentation about our timeshare in Lake Tahoe. And I don't know, and I shouldn't say I don't know. I do know what caught my eye and caught my attention and ultimately caught my paycheck, or at least caught my checkbook. I had just been watching The Godfather Part II, just before I received this. And if you remember The Godfather Part II, Michael Corleone moves the Corleone family and the family business out to Nevada. If you remember in Godfather 1, they take over Mo Green's casino and they're striving to be legitimate. They buy some or take control of some Las Vegas casinos and hotels. And so then apparently business is booming for the Corleones. And so in Part 2, they move out to Nevada to be close to business. Well, they show this beautiful estate where the movie is filmed, which is supposedly the home compound of Michael Corleone. And it's right on Lake Tahoe. And there are some amazing views of the surrounding area. Just gorgeous. The mountains. The lake is crystal clear. One of the cleanest, clearest lakes in the country. And that's not just subjective. That's fact. And the mountains around it, it's just a beautiful, tranquil place. And I remember seeing it. And I'd seen The Godfather Part Two many, 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 many times. I can recite it by heart. But I had just watched it, and I once again was just taken by the beauty and the serenity of the look of Lake Tahoe from this Corleone estate in The Godfather Part Two. And so then right after seeing this thing, This card comes that says, would you like to spend 2 days and three nights for free at our new or one of our newer, timeshare resorts? And so I said to my wife, why not? I mean, for just an hour to sit through a presentation? Well, lo and behold, we were so blown away by the area and by the facility and the whole resort that we wound up buying a timeshare there, and we have enjoyed that for many years. Well, but not actually that location, and that gets into my discussion for today. So, when I'm talking to the guy, I call him up, and I said, I got your little card here, and I'm interested. And he says, well, fantastic. What dates are good for you? And we start to hash the whole thing out. And I said, well, so how do I get to Lake Tahoe? Never been there before, not familiar with the area. How do I even get there? Where is it? And he says, it's a snap. You just fly into Reno, Nevada, and we are less than 15 miles away from Reno. It's probably a half hour, 45-minute drive. So it's very easy to get to. You live in Chicago, you can get a flight almost anywhere, which is one of the great, great advantages of living in the Chicago area. If you like to travel and you want to fly somewhere, what's so great about living in Chicago is that we live in one of the biggest hubs of a airport in the world. And there are connections and everywhere, and there are nonstop flights to many, many cities. So I said, boy, this is great. We'll just have to buy the air, and we're going to have to, 3 days for free. And he's talking all about it and what's in the area and all the amenities of the area. So I'm looking forward to it. He says, yeah, no problem. He says, when we get here, we'll tell you about some of the sites you can see, and you can really get a nice appreciation and a nice knowledge of the area. And who knows, if you're interested, you maybe will buy a timeshare unit, which means you basically get a week of time at that specific location. Or with the timeshare kind of system, you can use each week is assigned a certain amount of points. And if you don't want to stay at that specific resort, you can trade in your points and look at availability at some of their other resorts around the country as well, and use those points. And not, just because you bought that week at Lake Tahoe, you don't necessarily have to go there all the time. It gives you the flexibility to try out many of their other, resorts around the country in different locations. And so, and we have certainly taken advantage of that. But certainly wanted to go to Lake Tahoe, had Tahoe on the mind. And so according to this guy, hey, just get, fly into Reno, rent a car, 45 minutes away, and you're in Lake Tahoe. And you're going to enjoy two days and three nights of our beautiful, beautiful resort. So I said, hey, this sounds cool. So rent the car and get the map. This is It's not pre-internet, but it's kind of pre-GPS days. You're still looking at a map back in 2003 for the most part. And so, now I should preface that I am born and raised and have lived in the Chicago area my entire life. And for the most part, if you have lived in the Midwest in this area, you know that there are not many mountains. There's some hilly areas in our region, but my gosh, you can drive 500 miles, and you know, or maybe not 500, but certainly two or three, or four, and it's flatland in every direction. Our highways are flat. Our suburbs are flat. Our boonies are flat. It's just a flat area around Illinois and Iowa and Wisconsin and Indiana and Missouri and you name it. Any direction you want to go, northeast, south, or west, it's pretty flat here for a good portion of the drive. And so that's what I've grown up. I haven't grown up driving around in mountainous or overtly hilly areas. And growing up, when we went on vacations, we didn't drive. So I'm not even used to driving in a car that's overly hilly or over, you know, going into mountains. We never went. If we went somewhere, we would fly. They were far enough away where we didn't do the big road trips. So I'm not really used to driving in a mountainous kind of area. But at the same time, in my younger days, you know, just because I didn't do it doesn't mean I can't do it. And so I was certainly much more adventurous. And so we did go to areas like in Colorado or in Monterey and, you know, in California where there's some mountains and some, you know, kind of coastal highways. I say that I did that once, and the key term is once. Needless to say, and I've talked to you guys about my interesting feelings about heights. I like heights. I've gone on many high adventures, several thousand feet up, but at the same time, it's been scary. I have a very weird urge when I'm in a high area to jump. And as I've said, I've actually gone skydiving, which was the easiest thing in the world for me because I finally got to do what I wanted to do, was jump. But when I go to the top of a church or, you know, some high steeple somewhere, especially some of these European churches or the Duomo and, you know, in Florence, and my gosh, I mean, I have to do it because you got to do it. You know, we climbed up to the top of the Statue of Liberty because you got to do it, and you wind up in that little crown. But my gosh, when I was walking down the stairs and looking down all those stairs, my legs became rubber. Scariest feeling. So needless to say, I've got this weird thing about heights. And as I said, driving is even scarier. Because I don't know if you've done a lot of mountainous driving, but if you have, especially through the Rockies or you know, as I said, you know, Pacific Coast Highway in California, for some reason, many of these mountainous roads, these very treacherous roads, and even the people that live in the area call it treacherous. So my gosh, when the people there call it treacherous, then what is it to those of us who live in the flatlands of the Midwest? And many of these roads are not only just cut out to barely fit two cars, but I don't understand. If you've driven these, you know what I mean. There are very few guardrails on the sides of these roads that are in these mountains, these twisty, turny mountains. What's the thought process there? I mean, I don't care what your state is spending money on. You're a mountainous state, folks. You got to put guardrails up. And for those of us who have a weirdness with heights, to be driving on a road where you take a look over and it's a 1,000-foot drop, you don't even want to put your foot on the gas pedal. And as I said, I've learned through experience. One time my wife and I landed in Denver, and I said, oh, it's only a 2.5-hour drive to Vail, so we'll rent a car. It was in the summer, so it wasn't snowy. And I said, no problem, because I had actually driven that as I had was driven by somebody. I was in a car with somebody, so I wasn't driving it. So it was a beautiful drive. It was gorgeous. It was carefree because I wasn't driving. But my gosh, when I had to drive that, I was white-knuckling it the whole way. In fact, of course, on my way there, and I was getting, passed by trucks who are flying through the Rockies. Once again, half the roads, when you're going up the mountains, through the mountains, around the mountains, no guardrails. And of course, while I'm making this drive from Denver to Vail, it starts to pour rain. So now the trucks are not only passing me, but they're dousing me with water flying off their wheels as they're passing me. And then the sundae, or the cherry on the sundae, was then it started to hail. So then I pulled the car over, and I told my wife, and it's like, 1 p.m. I said, look, I got to tell you, I'm not driving in this weather. And if it doesn't stop raining, then this is our hotel tonight. Because I am not continuing to drive until it stops raining, and certainly until it stops hailing. And thankfully, it was one of those storms that just kind of burst and drop their rain and then move on. But when I got there and I had to drive back, I said, the last time. And so now we've looked for flights that fly into Vail because that was stressful. I tried to drive the Pacific Coast Highway in California. Everybody says it's gorgeous. You drive up Highway 1, and you see it on all those car commercials or any kind of commercials where you see that there's those cliffs with the Pacific Ocean right on the left side. That's the Pacific Coast Highway, and it runs all the way up California pretty much. Oh, you got to do that, right? Hey, once again, hey, Mr. Adventure, hey, let's drive the Pacific. It's great for my wife. She gets to see everything. And then while I'm driving, she says, hey, look at how beautiful that is. Look at how beautiful it is. Are you kidding me? I can't move my head. I'm like, take a picture of it. I'll see it. And this is the day before, digital cameras. Take a picture. When we get the film developed in a week, I'll see it then, because I can't see it now, because all I'm looking at is that car in front of me or those lines on the side of the road. I'm not turning my head to look at the water. If I do, we might end up in it. In fact, one time, the amazing Hearst Castle, William Randolph Hearst, Hearst Castle. It's on the coast, obviously, of California, San Simeon. It's right off of Highway 1. And I'm like, I cannot drive that far up. We were in San Francisco, which wasn't even that far from where it was. And I says, there's no way I can drive that. Because there's some of the road is right on the coast, and there is no guardrail, and there is crashing waves, and yes, it's gorgeous, but once again, it's not gorgeous for me, not gorgeous for the driver, gorgeous for the backseat person, gorgeous for the passenger side person, not gorgeous for the driver. So I said, there's no way I'm driving that, but I want to go see San Simeon, because it's kind of, Hearst Castle was a basis for the film Citizen Kane, Xanadu, and I'm a huge Citizen Kane fan and Orson Welles fan. So I'm like, look, I want to go. So how do we do this? I'm looking at the map once again, pre-GPS days. I drove 45 minutes inland in order to go north to get. Now, it would have been much easier for me to just take the Pacific Coast Highway straight there from where I was in San Francisco, but I actually drove 45 minutes inland to another interstate that took me north. But of course, as luck would have it, it ultimately took me northwest and brought me back to the Pacific Coast Highway, which I did see on the map. And thankfully, at that point, the road was actually a little more inward or inland. So I wasn't right on those cliffs and right on the edge. And I was able to do that drive. But even that drive was very hilly and very long because I had to go 45 minutes out of my way. So needless to say, I am not the best person to drive in a mountainous or overly hilly area because I grew up driving on the northwest side of Chicago. There are not many hills near Harlem and Irving or Addison and Irving or Belmont and Central, Chicago. Not many hills. That's where I learned to drive. That's where I did most of my driving. You know, I don't even go to Lake in the Hills. So when I fly into Lake Tahoe the first time, we go to Reno and I get the car. And it says, oh, and on the map, you know, that's what's great. Unless you have a 3D topographical map, everything looks flat, right? On a piece of paper. So I'm looking at this map and it shows a straight line right from the airport straight. And boom, there's Lake Tahoe. And I'm like, wow, this is going to be awesome. Get the car. And it's, you know, once again, noonish, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm like, how great is this going to be? But, you know, in less than an hour, we're going to be in beautiful Lake Tahoe. I just saw it in The Godfather Part Two, and now I'm going to be right there. So I'm driving. And I'm driving straight, and in front of me, far in the distance, but straight in front of me, I see this giant mountain. And the road I'm on looks like it is just going straight into that mountain. And so as I'm driving, I'm saying to myself, not saying to my wife yet, I'm just saying to myself, I don't want to show my cowardice too quickly. I'm saying to myself, there better be a big tunnel in that mountain because I'm driving straight toward that mountain. And if this road, the only place this road can go is either through that mountain with a tunnel or wind up that mountain. And sure enough, it wound up that mountain. What should have taken 45 minutes took me at least an hour and a half, if not longer. I was white-knuckled the whole way. I was driving about 5 miles an hour. I was pulling over on the shoulder, which was scary enough because half the drive there were no guardrails, just to let traffic go because I'm like, look, I can't drive more than 10 miles an hour here. I can't do it. I mean, I'm dying. I'm looking at, you know, it's gorgeous, but there's no guardrails half the time, and I'm looking over cliffs, and I'm seeing sky, and I'm seeing, and, you know, there's rocks, you know, then there's signs about, you know, rocks falling, and I'm like, what the hell am I doing? When I finally got there, I was physically exhausted, just sitting. I was so tense, so afraid. My hands, you had to peel my hands. And I'm not exaggerating. My hands were so tight on that wheel that my knuckles hurt. If you ever saw the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, there's a great scene where John Candy goes into traffic the wrong way and doesn't know it. And then all of a sudden they discover it when a truck is coming straight at them. And Steve Martin's in the passenger side, and his fingers, he grabs onto the dashboard in fear. And when they finally make it, they get out of it. They spin and they get out of it. And Steve Martin's fingers are embedded into the dashboard because he's grabbing on so hard he has to like almost pull his hands out of the dashboard with each finger making an impression in the dashboard. That's how I felt. And I got to the spot and he goes, hey, it's good to meet you. Good to see you. And I said, I was shaking. I was literally shaking. I was exhausted. I was sweating. I was so tense. I had a headache. My hands were killing me. My body was just spent. And I said, you can't tell people this is a half-hour drive? And, oh, it's a snap? I said, my God. He goes, well, what do you mean? I go, I'm from Chicago, man. Everything's flat there. We don't drive up mountains. And this mountain looked pretty treacherous to me. And there were no guardrails. And so finally, I didn't want to sound like too crazy, but I was like, you need to tell people, yeah, you're 12, 13, 14 miles away, but it's a mountain drive, so be prepared. I don't know how people drive up that mountain in the winter. And Lake Tahoe is a huge, huge ski resort. And last year they were saying they got 900 inches of snow. 900 inches, folks. What does that even mean? So could you imagine? I can't. I mean, you've got to have the chains and the whole thing when you drive up there. I don't know how people drive up there in the snow. But so fast forward from 2003 with this just amazing and this scary situation, devastating, horrific drive. I didn't want to go back to that Lake Tahoe as much as I loved it there, and it was gorgeous because I feared that ride, that drive, and it was also nice. We've been able to use many of the other locations, so it's not as if we got ripped off. It's just that we hadn't gone back to Lake Tahoe, and a major reason was because of that drive. And I swore that if we ever did go back there, I'm sorry, but we have to take a cab or hire a car. There is no way I'm making that drive. So it's been a while, 14 years since we've been back, and I said, well, why don't we go to Tahoe? Let's go back to Tahoe, but I am going to look into transportation. There's no way I'm making that drive. And thankfully, when you get to the spot there, much is self-contained, so you don't need a car, really, unless you're going to really make some other adventurous drives around the area. And so I said, if we do, we'll just take a cab. I'm sorry, but I can't drive it. Can't do it. Thankfully, so I looked into it. We did get a car. We hired somebody to come and pick us up, and it was worth every penny. I enjoyed the ride. He got there much quicker than I ever would have, and it was stress-free. And it was at night, which was even better because I couldn't see all the curves we were on. Although I must say, in the 14 years since we've been there, it seemed as if they did widen some of the roads on there, and they did put up a few more guardrails. So actually, it was good that we didn't go there for the last 14 years, because in that time period, they have built up the infrastructure, and the area surrounding the resort was actually built up with a few more restaurants and stuff. So it's actually worked out better. But so I figured I beat the odds on it. I did it, even though I was scared to death of going back there and having to drive. We hired a cab, whatever it was, and he took us there. So now we go to this place called Emerald Bay, which is the southern part of Lake Tahoe. And they said, oh, you've got to see Emerald Bay. And this is what they said to us the first time we went there. And they said, oh, it's very easy. Once again, follow the map. I'm driving. Once again, everything looks very straight and not hilly at all. I'm driving down south from where we're at in this area called Incline Village to Emerald Bay in Lake Tahoe. And if you are familiar with the area, you'll know what I'm talking about. And I make this ride, and it is petrifying. That's the only word I could use, is petrifying. There were some roads that only one car could go around a curve, and you had to stop and wait and go slow and wait to see if another car was coming. And once again, no guardrails. There was one road, there was a hairpin turn to go to this Emerald Bay where as I approached it, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I stopped the car. There was no, as you looked ahead, there was no road, just sky, because you're going to have to turn left. And so you didn't even see where the road was. All you saw, there was no guardrail. There was just a mountain on my left and a road that seemed to stop and sky. And I stopped the car and I said to my wife, I don't even know if I can continue to go. I don't know if I could drive this. I can't trust myself. What if I hit the gas too hard and we go over the side? I don't know what I'm going to do here. I don't know how much gravitational pull is in that area. But whatever it was, that's what got us around that curve. My foot was nowhere near the gas pedal. Whatever the car was able to idle and whatever gravity pushed me, that's how I got around that curve. And when I got around that curve, it seemed like it took a year. I had to pull the car over again just to breathe. But then when I got out of the car, I'm on the side of the road where there's no guardrail, and I look over the side and I almost fell. So that didn't help either. And I came back, and he said, how was Emerald Bay? And I said, oh, my God. You're driving me nuts here. So this time, we took a boat ride, like a nice big, almost like a one of those river boats that goes through Emerald Bay. I said, you know what? I'm not driving around Emerald Bay anymore. Let's go take a nice little boat ride, and we'll see Emerald Bay. We'll be in it, and we'll won't have to drive it. But of course, the pier to pick up this riverboat was about a 45-minute drive from where we were staying. So once again, I am not driving it. I'm not renting a car. So we arranged for a car to come and take us and pick us up. And so the woman who was driving was very nice. Her name was Laura. And so she said, oh, this is so I was telling her all my stories, and she was kind of laughing. And she said, oh, I've lived here many years. I do this ride many times, so don't worry about it. Well, and she was fine, except Laura was one of those drivers that likes to turn their heads and talk to the passengers in the car. And Laura was also a driver that likes to gesture quite a bit. And Laura was turning her head and gesturing while we were going around curves in these mountains with no guardrails. And she's telling stories and she's turning her head to us in the back. We're in an SUV and she's turning her head in the back. And then she's lifting both of her hands off the wheel. And there were a few times where she had to straighten the car. To the point where it was a 40-minute drive, and I have to say that I had my eyes closed for about 35 minutes of that drive. After I saw what was happening, and I saw how she was driving, and I don't know if we were ever close to falling over the edge or not because my eyes were closed. I was talking to her with my eyes closed, and we got done. And then she came back for us after this, you know, three-hour little boat ride. And my wife says to me, why were your eyes closed while you were? She said, I noticed you had your sunglasses on, but why were your eyes closed? I could see your eyes were closed. And I said, because I could not watch where we were going or what Laura was doing because she kept turning her head. And she's like, oh, my gosh, I know that was scaring me too. And I said, okay, at least it's not me. I said, but I couldn't keep my eyes open. I was so afraid. I was like, I'm not going to watch. If we go over, we go over, but I'm not watching this. Now, I've been accused of, when I drive, of kind of talking to the person in, you know, next to me and kind of turning my head, but I'm not driving on mountains. I'm not driving on cliffs with no guardrails, and I'm certainly not lifting both of my hands off the wheel. It was scarier than any roller coaster you're ever on. And we went back, and she was doing the same thing, and I just closed my eyes the whole way back, too. So all I can say is, oh, and there's another thing when you drive through the mountains. If you've driven through mountains, have you seen these runoff things? I didn't know what that meant. I thought it was runoff, meaning like, you know, rocks running off the side of the road. The runoff is actually a safety precaution for trucks that may lose or lose their brakes because of all the twisting and turning where you're driving through these mountain ranges and you have to be on your brakes, that your brakes may fail and suddenly you have no brakes And if that's the case, they have a thing called a runoff, which is basically they have built a long runway for a truck to go off the road on purpose, drive down this runway. I can only imagine how fast you're going because you're probably going downhill with no brakes. And the entire object is to drive into this giant pile of sand. And that's how your truck stops. You have no brakes. So just get yourself to one of these runoffs, get off the road, and let your truck just embrace yourself and just crash into this sand, and it'll absorb the your truck, and you won't crash. And so I saw these, and I saw a truck, even one of them, buried in there. And I'm saying, oh my gosh, you mean this is their solution? Their solution is, because they know that cars and or especially trucks are, this road is so treacherous that you could lose your brakes. Your brakes could wear out. And rather than going down this hill and going over the side because you don't have any control, because you have no brakes, they've built this so-called safety precaution. And the solution is to just let the car go off the road into some big pile of sand. This is the 21st century. And this is our solution. And my first thought was, this is what they've built because they're expecting this to happen. Why am I driving on this? What am I doing here? And so from now on, I will not drive it. So my goal is, when in doubt, call a cab. And welcome back to, whoa, that died quickly. Wait a minute, Jasmine, you're not going to get away with that quick. Get on the microphone there, Jasmine, producer. No, I don't want to hear the music. I want to hear your voice. Turn the music off. I want to hear your voice.
Am I in trouble?
Well, why did that music just stop?
Because I was switching to the next music, and it pulled off when I was switching off to the next music because Emily's going to come on.
I know him. I've got the sheet. I know what's next. I wrote the sheet up. I know what's next.
Am I fired now?
You're not fired, but let's let that play out, and I'll fade it down, and I'll vamp a little, and then you can, then you could pull the next one up while I'm vamping.
Okay. So should we try it again?
Oh, you want to do that? Yeah, okay. Here we go. So when in doubt, I'm going to actually give you a bonus line here. I said call a cab. I'm going to do it differently. I'm going to pretend that we just got through my little mountain drive segment. I'll say, so when in doubt, call the guy. And welcome back to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. And so now we are going to switch gears after talking about driving. We will switch gears and go to the Pop Culture Club with Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, did you see how nice that was, Jasmine?
Yeah, are you being a little bit of a diva today?
You can't. What's that?
I have my
hair,
so we had a whole
conversation. Yeah, I'm not a diva. No, we haven't. We're just, Jasmine and I have just started working together a couple of times, so we just need to, work out the kinks.
You're finding your rhythm.
Yeah, finding my rhythm, exactly. And she's more than competent. Don't get me wrong. I'm enjoying working with her, but gotta get the ironing board out. I just found out today that, why don't you turn the music down so I could talk to you, Jasmine? I just found out that Jasmine, because you're on the same mic as that music, I just found out that Jasmine makes her own hair weaves.
I do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, you should see her. I mean, she looks like, she looks like, every time you see her, she got a different hairstyle. She's like Beyonce. Every time I see her, she got a different hairstyle. So now, Emily, do you ever wear any kind of hair extensions or wigs?
I don't, but I probably should. I don't. I have very thin hair.
Now
so
she said
I could use a little more. I could use some
A little more. A little more. A little more. What would we say? Density.
Yeah.
You lose. Well, here's the thing.
I had more hair.
Who doesn't? Jasmine tells me, because she's got this this big kind of curly cue.
I would say Janet Jackson.
Yeah, she looks very Rhythm Nation.
Rhythm Nation, Janet.
Very, In fact, especially in these weird days of sexual harassment, it was a bold move. But you know that famous cover of the hands behind her.
Oh yeah,
of Janet Jackson. I even did that to Jasmine today, just because just because of the way your hair looked.
Not listening, I hope.
No, I'm not. I didn't do that.
No.
But she's very Rhythm Nation. In fact, I have what I'm going to do is next week I'll bring. I've got remember the little hat she used to wear too, that little square kind of military looking hat. I have a hat similar to that, so if you are still Rhythm Nationing next week, then I'll bring the hat.
Yes, because you know she was in Chicago last week. I went to her concert.
Oh, was she here?
Yes.
How was it?
Amazing. I've seen Janet like 5 times.
Janet. She's simply Janet.
Yeah, it's like Janet. That's
just Janet.
Just Janet.
So, Emily, have you ever heard of people making their own wigs or like people sell hair?
Like, what do you mean? Like people sell their own hair?
Or yeah, but here's my point. If you were to buy,
I've heard of that. I don't know anyone personally.
No, but what if you were to buy hair, right?
Yeah.
What don't you think it would be sold in pounds? Like how?
I never really thought of that.
What would be the measurement? Like if I want to buy a bag O'Hare. How do I buy a bag of hair? It's got to be like a pound, right? Give me 2 pounds of hair. Like, what? How else would I do
it? Hair doesn't really weigh that much. So you're talking like that's going to be really precise.
Well, what do I get? A nickel bag of hair then? I mean, what? Do I use marijuana terms? Do I buy a lid of hair?
Dime bag of hair? I don't know.
I think I got to buy at least a pound of hair. I mean, you got at least a pound. I mean, you should see her hair.
It is not a pound. It is not a pound. I swear it's not.
It looks like a pound.
Jim's talking about my hair. But it's very nice.
No, it is. No, it's very nice. It's very nice. It's very nice. No, it's very nice. It's just that it's
very big.
It's big hair. And I think that when you bought that, as I asked her, I said, she says, well, I make my own weaves. And I said, well, what do you buy? Like a 2 pounds of hair?
You buy it by the inches. So like,
there you go.
16 inches, 12 inches, and then they give you a bundle.
But what's a bundle?
There you go. I don't know. I need to research.
It's a bundle based on what? It's like your grandma's, recipe for bread. 2 handfuls. Well, grandma's hands are different than, I mean, a bundle is not a unit of measure.
I will look for it next time.
All right.
And I'll let you know.
I think you have to buy hair in pounds. Or kilos.
Emily, don't answer.
Get back to your podcasting, editing, whatever you're doing, or make another weave.
You see how he talked to me?
And wait till I get to know you. I don't even know you yet. I'm not even comfortable with you yet. So, what did we want to talk about? Wow, it's funny that I mentioned the sexual harassment, which I did not do to Jasmine.
No.
But does it count if you lust in your heart? I mean, I don't know, like Jimmy Carter? I don't know. But
an interesting question.
Well, I'll tell you though, I don't know about you, but I have been just amazed at the swiftness. It all started, and we touched upon this a few weeks ago with Harvey Weinstein, but now this Kevin Spacey. situation has just, I mean, once again, within a week, this went from an allegation. Yeah. This went from an allegation to him getting fired, to the show being put on hiatus, and then more allegations about Kevin Spacey. It's really been an amazing thing, and it just goes to show you the power of social media. Because, you know, I mean, without these allegations have been made about people in the past, but they've never really gained a lot of traction. But my gosh, look at this.
Well, yeah, it's the hashtag MeToo movement that I think has kind of opened the floodgates. And when we talked about this a few weeks ago, when we were talking about Harvey Weinstein specifically, I think we said, like, I don't think this is going to be the end of it.
Right, you know, exactly.
Because, yeah, and it seems like he was not going to end up being the only one. Well, first of all, I think we didn't think that was the end of the allegations against him.
Right.
But also, I think there was already a feeling that, like, you know what, he's not the only one out there doing this stuff.
And no, there's been a lot of...
It really has been, like you said, it's this, you know, the hashtag MeToo movement is a social media movement where people are tweeting and, you know, posting on Facebook and even Instagram, you know, hashtag MeToo to indicate that they've either been sexually harassed or sexually assaulted in some way. And the idea is so that the world starts to understand how ubiquitous this type of behavior is. And you know, it started by women to kind of show, like, how it was to show you, like, how many women, you know, have actually dealt with this on some level or another. And but now, as you said, with the Kevin Spacey allegations, it has also empowered men and women alike to share their experiences and not stay quiet about them any longer. So,
you know, it's going to be interesting too. You know, what we hear most often, and you've always heard this about, you know, rape as well, is that, you know, a lot of times this is not an act of sexual motivation, but of a motivation of power over another person.
Right.
And so what's going to be interesting to me is, as we move forward to this, because now we've got a heterosexual man, and we've got a homosexual man, and then Kevin Spacey, I think, got in trouble because he, in his effort to spin the severity of the allegations about the sexual harassment, he also decided to finally tell the worst kept secret in Hollywood and say that he was gay, and a lot of gays did not like the fact that he tied those two together.
No.
And so that didn't help his cause, and he clearly either didn't listen to his PR people or his PR people gave him bad advice. But either way, it was a really a bad move and was not accepted at all well, especially within the gay community. And many high-profile homosexuals, especially in Hollywood, came out, and like Wanda Sykes and Rosie O'Donnell and Zachary Quinto, and said, okay, that's not cool either. But I'm wondering... Because, especially in the last several years, women have, especially in Hollywood too, women have begun to take on positions of power. And so it will be very interesting to see if men or women may begin to make allegations about women who may have...
Well, I suppose you never know.
I don't know. I mean, or is this just a is this just a male kind of behavior? Or if it is about power, then it would then if it's not about sexuality and it's about power, then it would seem to be logical that it wouldn't be a stretch that woman could also abuse their power as well. Now, I don't know, nothing's come out yet, but that will be interesting
to
see.
You know, I think you're right that logically it would follow that way if it really is more of a power thing. But, you know, I mean, one of the issues is there are so many men in power.
Right.
In
countries,
and not a lot of women who are necessarily in positions of power.
But there have been over the last several years, you know, some women that have taken over some very high profile CEO jobs, you know, at automakers and in the tech world especially, and in Hollywood. You know, the woman who's basically running the show and making the major decisions for all the Star Wars franchises is a woman. And there are certainly some other women who have headed up studios, and now there are several women that are heading up the programming for network television or other kinds of you know, cable, things like that. So I don't know. I'm just saying that will be very interesting because right now, you know, it is obviously a male-dominated kind of problem, but it will be interesting to see if it is if it really does, you know, pass over. And if women will or have abused, and it could be not it doesn't have to be a woman on a woman. It could be a woman. You remember what was that movie a couple of years? Remember it was several years ago with Demi Moore, where she was kind of sexually harassing.
Oh yeah,
remember that movie? I think
vaguely. I can't remember the name of it though.
Michael Crichton, I think, wrote it. You know, the guy who wrote Jurassic Park and everything. But there was a movie where it was a powerful woman who was sexually harassing a man.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was Michael Douglas in it. She played his boss or something.
Was it? Yeah, I don't know. It started with a D.
Michael Douglas.
Yeah, I can't remember it now.
Yeah.
If there was only a device that we had that we could find that out.
Yeah, if there was only a way to look this up, like with an almost immediate result.
Exactly. But unfortunately, I don't have one. I've got a flip phone. So
I'm talking on my phone right now.
Oh, okay.
I actually could still look it up. That's how great my phone is.
You can do it. Oh, I dare you.
Yeah.
I dare you to do that right now.
But I have to put you on speaker if I do that.
That's all right. That's all right.
Okay. This will be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, let's see. It was, so I guess I would put, in the search thing, I would put Demi Moore sexual harassment movie. Right?
Nobody's tracking my Google search.
Right.
This kind of makes me seem pretty lame for even Googling this. Okay, so showing you the power of the smartphone.
Of the...
Oh, 1994, Disclosure.
Disclosure. Right. I told you it started with a D. You knew it started with a D. Disclosure, right.
It was Michael Douglas,
right?
That is harassed by his boss, Demi Moore.
There you go. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. Yeah, now get off the speakerphone.
Well, actually, I am off speakerphone. So okay. You can't even tell the difference.
See that?
See? See, that's how amazing the smartphone is.
That technology is unbelievable.
I know. You know, it's interesting, too, because, like, as far as the... I've been thinking about this with the Kevin Spacey thing, and then I saw it so clearly articulated in... It was like a... There was an article about this, but they used someone, it was like a screen grab of a Twitter post. But it's kind of that double standard of like, this, like the person who tweeted about this was not a celebrity, it was just an everyday person, and whoever wrote the story picked this up. But basically said, like, it's interesting that it took decades and like droves of women to come out to finally get someone to listen about Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein, yet it just took one dude to accuse Kevin Spacey, and like overnight,
right?
He was like brought to justice. Because the thing is, it was initially Anthony Rapp, who is primarily known, I think, for his Broadway work.
Right, he was in Rent.
Who accused him, and that's when Kevin Spacey made the statement. And also made the mistake of like just thinking that it was a good idea to come out while he was also addressing these accusations. But then, since then, there have been other men who have come out. But even before that, even when it was just one person, you know, immediately he was being brought to justice. And so you do have to wonder also about that double standard.
You know what I think is, I think what we're finding when justice or injustice, depending on your viewpoint, is brought down so swiftly. And I think there's no doubt the impact that social media has and how fast things move and how fast things spread and how fast everybody has an opinion. And like you said, then the hashtag Me Too began, and suddenly the whole thing just took on a life of its own. But I think where Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey also have something in common is, I mean, Harvey Weinstein, you know, to use the phrase, you know, his behavior was kind of an open secret, if you will, in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. A lot of people knew of his boorish behavior, but because he was so powerful and influential, and these people are worried about their careers or their future careers or their potential careers, they sort of kept quiet. I think Kevin Spacey also was kind of an open secret, and everybody knew pretty much that he was homosexual. And I think that the reason that so many people have come down so hard on him so fast, and Netflix, I mean, fired him, and they've closed down, you know, and the future of House of Cards now is up for grabs. Just a very swift kind of judgment without really, you know, much of a trial. But I also think that the reason that Weinstein and Kevin Spacey were sort of just so quickly dismissed by everyone, especially within their respective communities, is because I think Kevin Spacey, once again, very popular, very powerful actor, two-time Oscar winner. You know, he's always at every event. He's a big fundraiser. He's, you know, everybody, you know, from an artistic standpoint, everybody liked him. You know, House of Cards, a huge hit. You know, everything he's in, you know, always very popular. Some of the great movies of the last 25 years. But I think in the gay community, a lot of people were quietly very angry at Kevin Spacey for not coming out sooner and embracing his homosexuality and being a leader and helping in, you know, 20 years ago when he won for, you know, American Beauty. If he would have come out, it still wasn't a badge of honor yet. It was still kind of, you know, iffy about actors coming out. And if he someone of his magnitude had come out, then perhaps he could have made, he could have pushed the cause a little quicker and maybe, you know, brought more people to understand it because of someone of his magnitude and someone who people that liked him. So I think in the gay community, there was this kind of a thing where they were kind of waiting for something to happen to Kevin Spacey. And the same thing with Weinstein. It's like no one wanted to be the first person to pull their finger out of the dam. But as soon as somebody did pull their finger out, then the floodwaters just went nuts.
Yeah, they did. But still, it took many, many, many years of people knowing.
All right.
You know, hearing these rumors, knowing about it. And, you know, with Harvey Weinstein, it's like there's the level of, you know, people who said, like, it was kind of known. Like, I mean, Courtney Love said, you know, 10 years ago in an interview, like, her advice to, like, stars to be like, don't go to Harvey Weinstein's hotel, you know. And, of course, nobody listened to Courtney Love back then. But, you know, so there's that level of, like, it was sort of known that he kind of behaved this way and was known to harass women. But then, you know, also, I mean, the Rose McGowan, Alec Baldwin just said in an interview the other day that he heard that the rumor that Harvey Weinstein raped Rose McGowan decades ago.
Yeah.
So the problem is that, you know, now you're talking about, like, this is kind of, you know, I mean, this is like criminal behavior. And people did know about it, and nobody really did do anything about it. And it really took a lot of people to come out at the same time for this to be pursued and for this to be, you know, like, brought to justice. And I think that is kind of a shame. And you do sort of have to wonder, like, why is it that we're so quick to dismiss when women are making allegations? But that with, like, in the Kevin Spacey case, one man comes out and everybody's like, oh, look what Kevin Spacey did. You know?
Yeah. So that, no, it's a good point.
That angle as well. But it's tough, though, too, because, you know, it affects so many people. I mean, with House of Cards being in limbo at the moment and Netflix has said that they will not be involved in any further production that involves him. But it's a tough situation. I mean, on one hand, it affects so many people. You know, like, I read that there are, like, almost up to 2,000 jobs in Baltimore that are in jeopardy if House of Cards ends.
Wow.
It's not just the crew members that you have, but you also have all these local businesses that benefit from having a major studio production filming on location there.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, I mean, you've got these assault charges going back years and years, many years ago. But then, since then, there have also been people who have worked on the House of Cards set who have accused him of sexual harassment. And so that, in the workplace, and so that is the kind of thing that, you know, Netflix and whoever produces House of Cards, whatever company does that, I mean, they also have to think about their current workplace and people who could actually be in danger, like, right now, you know, because they're having to work alongside somebody who you know, has allegedly been sexually harassing people on set and things like that. So that's another thing that they have to think about. You know, they have to think about, like, the welfare of their employees right now. And so it's a weird thing, though, because as the lead on that show, when they, if they shut that down, it affects all the people who worked on that.
Oh, right, definitely. Well, here's my question to you.
Really hard on it for years.
Here's my question to you. So, I mean, are you a fan of Kevin Spacey or not?
Well, I was.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a fan
yeah.
of Kevin Spacey.
So here's my question. So here's my question, because maybe you've already answered it. Because the same thing happened in 1992. If you remember, Woody Allen was in a very scandalous lawsuit with Mia Farrow about a potentially sexually abusing their adopted daughter. Mel Gibson was involved with that drunken tirade against his girlfriend.
Oh, God. He's done a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Casey Affleck, in the midst of the Oscar race, was accused of sexual harassment, and he won the award. And think about this. Think about this. According to tradition, Casey Affleck will be presenting the Best Supporting Actress Oscar at this year's Oscars.
Right.
And he's an accused, if not, and he didn't deny it, sexual harasser. So there's a lot of things going on. But here's my bigger question. You know, I mentioned Woody Allen. I mentioned Mel Gibson. They were scandalized. There were, you know, various serious allegations about them, whether it was misogyny, whether it was sexual abuse, whether it was racism. And in the ensuing years, Woody Allen has won an Academy Award and has been nominated several times. Mel Gibson has been nominated several times just last year for an Academy Award. And this year, he's in a buddy, family-oriented holiday film.
Yeah.
You know, Daddy's Home 2? And
yes.
So here these guys were pariahs for a while, and yet Hollywood and the audiences apparently have forgiven them. And so my question is, can you and should we, and I say you both personally as well as, you know, the bigger you, is it right? Can we or should we separate the artist's art from their behavior? Is that possible? Should we do it? I mean, can you watch Unusual Suspects or American Beauty again?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so this is the thing. I mean, okay, so there's a couple things happening there. Like, if American Beauty or The Usual Suspects is on HBO, can I watch it again? I mean, I don't know. You know, it's similar to Harvey Weinstein. It's like, should anything, like, should we never go back and watch those films that have already been made? Should anything that is in the can but yet to be released be shelved? I don't know, because, again, there were many people involved in those productions, and that's their work, too. You know, honestly, like, in Harvey Weinstein's case, he's a producer and a distributor. He didn't actually make the films. It's a little different than Woody Allen.
Well, that's why I'm saying the Kevin Spacey thing is different.
Are you really never going to watch Pulp Fiction again? You know, I don't know. But on the flip side, I feel like by supporting their work, you know, if Woody Allen releases a film tomorrow, or, you know, and we all go see it, or even like other, you know, actors in Hollywood who continue to work with Woody Allen or Roman Polanski, you know, you kind of have to think to yourself, like, if you're supporting their work in that way and you're perpetuating their professional success, you're giving them a forum to continue to operate in this way, and you're also dismissing what's happened. And like with Woody Allen, you know, his daughter accused him of molesting her as a child. In Kevin Spacey's case, you have people who are saying that, you know, they were minors when this happened to them. You know, I mean, that's pedophilia any way you slice it, you know. And so it's hard. I think you sort of have to take a step back from their work and say, yeah, you know what, as a society, we don't condone this. And we can't,
well, the only,
know, by supporting them as artists, then we sort of are condoning that, aren't we?
Well, yeah, and I think this is the rub here, and what's so difficult about this is because so many artists, whether they're actors, whether they're painters, whether they're you know, recording artists, you name it, you know, they live different lifestyles. They do partake in different, you know, personal behaviors. I mean, I've begun reading the, you know, the biography of Leonardo da Vinci. And I mean, I don't think that he was necessarily a pedophile, but it's pretty much on record that he traveled with a very young boy for many years, who, and he stayed with him. But at the beginning, this kid was a young kid, and there's no question as to maybe what was going on here. So now, Can I not look at the Mona Lisa? Can I not? You know, I mean, there's been stories about, you know, Michelangelo's homosexuality. Can I not go and look at the David now? I mean, this is, you know, look at Picasso. I mean, this guy had mistresses and everything else. I mean, once again, I don't know about anything illegal. I mean, we're talking, like you said, which is a very good point. We're talking about not only questionable behavior, but actually illegal behavior. So there is a difference there, too, which is a very important distinction that I think that was a good that you made. But still, once again, I mean, you know, we hear the stories of Picasso and all these painters and Oscar Wilde. And so I guess what's difficult is, you know, I don't know if there's a different standard. Now, I mean, to your point, which is a good point, maybe it's the legality versus morality. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's a way that, you know, to your point about, condoning this behavior, which is illegal as well as immoral. But so maybe the morality side, if it's something that's just a questionable morality, maybe that's not as bad of a behavior, or in quotes, a sin, as something that is patently illegal and deserves to draw punishment and perhaps banishment, or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I mean, as I remember, you know, the Woody Allen thing. I mean, I love Woody Allen. He's one of my favorite artists of any kind. I think the guy's just a brilliant, and I love his movies. And you know, these allegations were against him were just awful, and they came on the heels of him, you know, going with Sun Yi, who was Mia Farrow's adopted daughter, and him having naked pictures of her and then, you know, marrying her. So, I mean, there's a lot of questionable, you know, behavior there. And some of it was potentially illegal. I mean, I don't think he was ever found guilty. But it didn't stop me. It didn't stop me from enjoying and laughing at a Woody Allen movie. And so I look at this, and I am a fan of Kevin Spacey's, and it is very difficult. As I said, I don't certainly condemn or condone what he did, but I don't know. It's such a tough call, because unfortunately, you know, many of our most, you know, respected and heralded artists of both not only today but throughout the centuries were not the most moral and the most, law-abiding people. They lived alternate lifestyles. And Mozart, look at Amadeus. I mean, the guy was crude and you name it. And so it's a tough call, because I sadly, as we talked about before, you know, I mean, there were some allegations against, you know, from 40 years ago or 30 years ago against Dustin Hoffman. I mean, it, you know, people are just coming out of the woodwork now, and, you know, whether these are, and every lawyer will tell you, an allegation does not mean it's true, but as we've also learned, allegations stick much more than retractions do, and it's all it takes is one person, whether it's founded or unfounded. And look at Bill Cosby, everybody's favorite TV father. Bill Cosby, who would sermonize about especially African Americans and how they needed to act better, and he actually took a lot of heat for that, because he was condemning the African Americans and some of their behaviors. And meanwhile, look what he was doing, allegedly.
Right. Well, yeah, and also it was very jarring too, because like Bill Cosby's comedy was always, for the most part, pretty clean,
right?
You know, relatively speaking.
Well, he would actually be mad at comics that used profanity. He was anti-profanity.
Yeah, and even on the Cosby Show, like, the, you know, the family that he put on screen. I mean, it was just like such a wholesome family
right.
environment, and the parents were like, I mean, you know, Bill, it was Bill Huxtable, right?
Yeah, the Huxtables.
Cliff,
right.
No, Cliff.
Yeah, Huxtable, Cliff Huxtable. Yeah.
Cliff Huxtable was like, you know, the best dad on any
right.
sitcom you'd ever seen anywhere in the history of dads, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
And so that was also very shocking too, because everyone had this image of Bill Cosby, which was very wholesome and family man and, you know, someone who you would think that you can trust.
Yeah.
No,
it's a very
feel like where, why, how, who Hollywood picks and chooses, because, you know, in the case of Woody Allen, you know, there's still a lot of, A-list celebrities who want to work with him, who continue to work with him, who stick up for him when they're asked about him, you know, like Blake Lively, Kristen Stewart.
Oh yeah.
They've been asked about their decision to work with him. And even since the Me Too movement started, you know, Kate Winslet, who on one hand condemned Harvey Weinstein in a statement, but then in an interview shut down a question she was asked about working with Woody Allen by sort of suggesting, well, you know, I don't know the family and I didn't know him at the time, so it wasn't really my place to really judge. And it's like, well, actually, but it's a small child who, you
right.
know, someone who was a small child at the time. And you don't ever want to ever think, you know, you want to give children the benefit of the doubt. You want to protect them, you know. And so it's just this weird thing about, like, I don't know how they pick and choose other than, you know, Woody Allen in their minds is so iconic and they want to work with him, so they don't want to believe this.
Well, that's, I mean, there's no, there. That's the problem. I think there are no, you know, very definitive lines here. And as I said, I think, you know, in the case of Harvey Weinstein, a lot of people did not like him, but no one wanted
right.
to cross him in the case
and I think they heard about this stuff and they probably believed the rumors that they
oh, yeah.
heard. But you're right. No one wanted to be the one person to stick
yeah.
their neck
and Kevin Spacey, you, like I said, I think he was obviously, you know, admired for his acting talent. But I said, like I said, in the gay community, I think there was probably an underbelly of people kind of not being a fan of his. And when this happened and the swiftness of it, it seemed okay to come out. And as I said, everybody now on social media has a voice. And so to your point, which you make a good point, I don't know how, you know, like you said, in the case of Kate Winslet, I mean, she's on both sides of the fence and you can't do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I think it really comes down to who the public or who the insiders like. Cause like I said, you know, Dustin Hoffman's getting kind of a pass. In fact, Meryl Streep is now denying a story from back that she told several years ago in an interview about how Dustin Hoffman may have also grabbed her breast when he first met her, you know, during Kramer versus Kramer or during another project. And she even said in that interview several years ago, oh, I thought he was a pig. And now she's backing away from it. So I don't, you know,
right.
at the time she didn't back away from it, but now she is. So I think it also
right.
depends on if people are well liked, both either by the public or within the circles of where they work, whether it's especially in Hollywood, everybody's for fair game. But I don't know. This is not an issue that's going to go away anytime soon, and I'm sure we will talk
no.
about it again. But it's difficult because, like I said, I've always been a huge Kevin Spacey fan. I always felt he's one of the best actors around, and there's very few pieces of his work that I have not seen, and I have enjoyed just enjoy him. I mean, he's a little over the top sometimes, especially when he hosts some award shows and stuff. He loves to sing and dance. Oy vey.
Right.
But but you got to be a ham. I mean, that's part of the job. But I mean, I've always respected him, and so this is not easy. To decide, but as you said, maybe it's a good rule of criminality versus immorality. Maybe that's,
maybe
that's the line. Well, thank you once again, Emily. Always interesting. You always bring up thoughts, funny thoughts, as well as thoughts for us to think about. And it's up. If you need, I will give you Jasmine's number, and she could make you a hair weave or a wig with 4 pounds
good.
Of hair. Just order about... Just order about 4 pounds. Yeah, Emily's hair is very thin. She needs about 4 pounds of hair.
I'll, Yeah, I'll try to figure out about roughly how many pounds I'll need, and then I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Very good. Take care, Emily.
Thanks, Tim.
Take care. Hit that music there. There. And so that ends another episode, episode 78, in fact, of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. A new episode posted every Monday. So come back often and soon. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Captain Podtastic, the only podcast that goes from the end of the web to your screen.